The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
Not that I'm the worst husband in the world, but I'm sitting there last night watching Thursday night basketball at dinner. We were sitting at a bar. We didn't go for romance. We went for good food. We were at our sponsor, Little Donkey. It's one of her favorite places. So we went there and had some afternoon drinks in an early evening and caught the beginning of the Houston basketball. Not that a lot of people here care, but pretty soon, in about a month, a lot of people around here will be filling out a bracket in their office. And Houston's got that little number 9 beside their name. But I was trying to explain to some people at the bar, that's the kind of team I think will end up costing you your bracket if you have them playing deep into this tournament. Do you think Houston has staying power when it gets to the tournament? They look really good against the UConn team last night, but is Houston really the number 9 team in the country?
I mean, they've got one loss, and that one loss is at Temple this year. They got some decent wins against a team like Oregon. You know, I don't know. Houston was a team I was all in on last year, and a team that should have beaten Michigan. You remember the Michigan shot?
Yes.
Michigan ultimately goes on, and they play for the national championship. And this Houston team last year I thought was really, really good. But that's when they had Rob Gray. You remember the bad ponytail guard?
Yes.
And he takes off, and I just didn't think this Houston team would be as good as they were last year. And they're in the top 10, and they're sitting at 24-1.
So that's why I'm saying 24-1 Houston, the Americans not bad. That seems like the kind of team that will kill you in your bracket.
Meanwhile, like in a good way or a bad way, people buy into Houston?
People will buy in because a lot of people who fill out their brackets they're like me. They're not basketball savants. They don't watch a lot of games like you do. They don't study it, and they just, this seems the number 9 team in the country. Surely they'll make it to the Sweet 16, and you go boom, boom, and you have them out to 16 or maybe even to the Elite 8.
Do you think the Americans better in football or basketball right now?
I think it's better in football, actually.
Yeah, I can't decide because, you know, you've got good basketball. We're talking about Houston, and Cincinnati's really good, and Temple is always kind of a steady program. But I would tend to agree with you. Memphis is up and coming. I'm surprised Wichita State is where they are right now. I thought under Greg Marshall this would be a program that would go nowhere, but they've been very average.
There's Morant and Murray State playing last night against Austin Peay. And you'll see little Murray State, and unless you've paid attention to Morant, that's a team you may not have moving past the first round because they'll be in a tough matchup. He's one guy that can take over a basketball game. He had 32 last night, puts the team on his back against Austin Peay. You know, superstars, guards, they can win a game in the tournament just on a solo show. He's one of those type guys.
Yeah, and Ja Morant is a guy that Alabama fans got to see earlier this year. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see what this team's able to do once Murray State, if they get to the NCAA tournament, because he is a guy, as you said, can take over a game, and he's probably going to become the first player to average 20 points and 10 assists since 1983,
yeah,
which is a big number.
A big number there, and he's a star to watch. So interesting bracket thoughts as we start off this day about a month away from National Signing Day, and it dawned on me last night, it's deeper into March than it's been. Everything's a week later now. Like, usually we're playing the NCAA tournament St. Patrick's Day. I think if I saw the calendar correct, Selection Sunday is the Sunday after St. Patrick's Day. We're a week later on the schedule this year for whatever reason.
It's actually on St. Patrick's Day.
Selection Sunday is?
Yeah, on the 17th.
17th. So usually that's when we're playing the first round of the tournament, the week of. So for some reason, we're a little deeper into the calendar this year. There was a baseball scout, a very famous baseball scout that passed away this week. 93-year-old T-Bone Giordano, 93 years old, and he was still out scouting.
That's a good run.
Yeah, he's one of those guys like that Clint Eastwood movie that could hear the swing, you know? Sounds different when he swings.
Never saw that. What was it, Love of the Curveball or something?
It had Justin Timberlake.
Trouble with the Curve.
Yes.
Never saw it.
Lincoln Riley is inked back in Oklahoma in Norman, and got Jalen Hurts as his quarterback. I don't know if they'll be disappointing or not. We talked about disappointing college football teams that could let you down coming up in 2019 yesterday. Here's Lincoln Riley on explaining why he turned down several different NFL offers
to come back and coach in Oklahoma. Listen to this and tell me if you think he's a college lifer or will one day he actually take one of these NFL offers.
I think, you know, signing here is a combination of a lot of things. It's the belief in this program. I mean, this is one of the elite of the elite as far as football programs out there. This is one of the best football jobs in America, not just in college. And to the place we love and a place that gave me a chance at a very, very young age when I didn't have to. And I believe our best times are ahead of us, regardless of how good it's been here to start. So, yeah, I'm excited about what we're doing here. I love coaching at Oklahoma and plan on doing it for a long time.
Love coaching Oklahoma, plans on doing it a long time. There are a lot of people who have said that and later gone on to the NFL. But Lincoln Riley looks like he wants to be a college coach for at least this point in time, still very young. Lincoln Riley, ever in the NFL or not in your eyes?
Well, it's hard to say never because the guy's only 35. And, you know, realistically, he's got 40 more years of coaching if he wants that. I mean, the money he's making right now is massive. I don't know why you would go to the NFL based on the fact you're making $6.5 million right now. And you can make an argument in a combination of two first years in a Power 5 program, he's done as well as anybody in the history of the game. I mean, he's 24-4. He's produced back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners, and he's been in two college football playoffs. Look, I know he's yet to win a national championship, but two Big 12 championships. You know, the only problem becomes for Lincoln Riley is the expectation, because the expectation's never going to go backwards, and you do have Tom Herman in Texas lurking right there in the Big 12. So after winning 12 games in both of these seasons, after having this incredible and efficient offense, the expectation is every year to win the Big 12 and go to the college football playoff. Anything less is a failure.
The same type of expectations that a Nick Saban and a Dabo Swinney have now, right?
Yeah, the good news is on the other side of that, Bob Stoops wins national championship, Oklahoma's last, back in 2000. And he coached there for 18 years. And in year two, he won it, never won it again. And it seemed like maybe it got stale for a second, but Oklahoma fans still really embrace Bob Stoops.
Absolutely. Lincoln Riley is off there with those numbers off to that start. There is a point in time, if he ever starts, you know, clipping off national championships, you'd start to discuss him being one of the greatest of all times. He's on that pace right now. He's off to a better start than Dabo. He's off to a better start than Nick when they started. He got a good job right out of the gate. He could be the greatest coach of all time, and we're watching him in his third year right now.
Well, you tell me right now. I mean, it's Nick Saban one, and Dabo's a close second, right?
That's where I would stack him right now.
Yeah, and Urban's obviously out of the game right now. If, for whatever reason, Jalen Hurts comes in and puts up these massive numbers that we've seen over the last couple of years with Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, and Oklahoma breaks through and wins a national championship, would you not immediately put Lincoln Riley at number three? I don't know how you couldn't.
You know, I'll be honest with you, LT, if Urban was still in the game, I think he may be fourth right now. The way it had gone for him the last couple of years, I may have gone Nick, Dabo, Lincoln, Urban, even if he was still in the game. If he was back this year at Ohio State, I may have gone 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, I'm not ready to go Lincoln 3 right now, but I think if he won a national championship, I think he would definitely have
Oh, you don't
to.
Have Lincoln 3 right now in the game?
I don't think so.
But who else? He's done 2 years, and I know it was handed to him, so to speak. But Jeff Gordon got a good car handed to him right out of the gate.
Yeah,
he's one of the greatest of all time.
I would have to look at this. Again, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, he has had really, really good quarterbacks.
My thing on Lincoln being long-term at Oakland, at Oklahoma, is I don't know if they are friends, Cliff Kingsbury and him, but I picture them being friends. Right, I picture them talking a lot. They may never even talk ever.
They seem to have a lot in common. They really do.
They seem to have
outside
a lot in common.
Outside of wins and losses.
If he gets to Arizona, has some success, and they're hanging out at some place or talking on the phone, and Cliff explains to Lincoln how much easier the NFL game is compared to the recruiting. It's the recruiting's the wild card, right? You got to love recruiting. You got to love getting out and talking to kids, talking to parents, and trying to convince them to come to your school. And all of a sudden, it seems like that's why you're seeing defensive coordinators leave. It's why you see offensive coordinator leave Alabama, go to Miami, because of the grind of the college game. And the NFL, the perception is, still hard work, still a grind, but without the recruiting, it's not the same type of grind. A couple of these have rolled in, and Jared, the first one. You can make a case for Kirby Smart in his short time at Georgia, as being the number three guy. I would probably still lean slight edge Lincoln Riley, but Kirby Smart's been to a national championship game, beat Lincoln Riley head-to-head, and if not for having to play Alabama in the national in the SEC championship this year, could have been back in the national championship game again. I would have probably taken that Georgia team over that Oklahoma team in the Orange Bowl if they had beaten Alabama.
You know, it sounded completely ridiculous when I threw it out, and you said Lincoln Riley's already my number three guy because I said if he wins a national championship next year. But when you really start to look at it, I don't know who that third guy is, and I think you can make an argument for Kirby Smart. But realistically, in 2 years, Lincoln Riley's done more than Kirby's done in 3 years.
Lincoln Riley probably is our answer here. Kirby's a great input from Jared there. Drake goes a different route. He says, at number three, I'm going to base my answer on who I'd want to replace my current coach wherever I am. And he says, I would want Dan Mullen to be that guy.
Well, I think Dan has solidified himself as a top 10 guy. And, you know, against all odds when he was in Starkville and getting that team to number one and having a consistent 8-9 win team at Mississippi State to taking over one of the better programs in college football and getting them to 10 wins – and really seemed like he did it with smoke and mirrors last year. And I think there's going to be a huge expectation in Gainesville this year. I think Dan Mullen is a top 10 guy. I wouldn't put him at number three, but you know, we had this pop up a couple of weeks ago. Who would you rather have, Dan Mullen or Lincoln Riley? And I don't know. I just don't know.
For some reason, I think Lincoln Riley, but I guess I'm basing that on what I've seen with the championships in the Big 12 and the wins and the losses, the few losses and the 24 wins.
And, you know I'm in the minority here, and especially with you guys, I still think Chris Peterson is one of the best coaches in college football.
Did not pop on my radar instantly.
You know, Washington just hasn't been to this level since what you saw with Don James and them winning a national championship almost 30 years ago.
Washington is one of 10 teams that have been to the college football playoffs. Notre Dame, the last team to make their first trip in to the college football playoffs. And a discussion I wanted to ask is, who do you think is the next first team to get in? I'll just, for those of you driving and don't have a chance to Google real quick, I'll just recap for you who quickly have been in the 5 years of the college football playoffs. We've had 10 different teams. It has been mostly Alabama every year, Clemson almost every year, Oklahoma almost every year. But by conference, in the SEC, we've had Alabama and Georgia. The Big 12, we've had Oklahoma. The Big 10, we've had Ohio State and a forgettable semifinal game with Michigan State. We've had Florida State. We've had Clemson. We've had Oregon. And we've had Washington. And then last year, Notre Dame was the 10th team to go in.
Yeah, I feel really good it's going to be one of two teams. Last year, I would have made it one of three teams because I would have included Michigan. I'm not going to put Michigan on this list right now.
Michigan, not on your list.
But I think it's going to be Florida or Texas.
So you put the Florida Gators into that conversation as being maybe the next team to be the get their first playoff appearance.
You know, and the interesting thing is I don't think it could be this year, even coming off the 10 wins last year. I think in 2 years, it could be Dan Mullen in Florida. And this year, I think it could be Texas and Tom Herman. Really, Tom Herman's just got to beat Oklahoma. Go 11-1, you can lose one game in the Big 12, win the Big 12 championship, and I think more than likely they're in. And especially with their starting spot, I think Texas is going to be top 6-7 team to start the season.
Really, 5 years in, you thought we would have a USC by now, right?
I would have thought, yeah, until they hire Clay Helton.
No USC yet. Finally got Notre Dame in there. There are some powers missing. Texas is one of them.
I would have thought Jim Harbaugh. When Jim Harbaugh was hired, how has he not already been to a college football playoff? So I mean, we know the answer now, but back then it seemed like an easy answer that he was going to get there.
So Florida is ahead of Michigan.
I think so. I don't know where you put them right now.
Is there another SEC team you put ahead of Michigan?
And I don't know if you actually saw that game earlier this year.
I did. We were watching it right there at the Clevelander.
Yeah, 41-15.
Not even close.
Michigan, a more talented team, I thought, this year.
So you thought it was a coaching
I think
mismatch.
That had something to do with it. I don't know what's going on with Jim Harbaugh. I've never been a fan. I know you and Brown were more of a fan of Jim Harbaugh years ago, and I think you've probably soured on that a little bit. But I'm just really surprised that he hasn't been able to get Michigan to that level.
Tiger points out Texas has to beat LSU this year. Texas, LSU's a team that you would think 5 years into this would have maybe sniffed a college football playoff.
You know, we've been on these locations and we've seen, you know, it's Super Bowl-like in these press conferences. I just can't see Ed Orgeron in that situation.
Waiting on Ed to get that contract. 6:42 on the show. So Texas maybe this year. If not Texas this year, Florida gets into the conversation very quickly for you. And then Michigan is somewhere on the horizon as a team that could get there.
Yeah, and I think Wisconsin's one of these teams, too. You know, Paul Chryst, nobody's going to put him as the third best coach in college football. But, you know, outside of last year and a really disappointing 8-win season for Wisconsin, this is a guy that's winning 11 games a year. And Wisconsin has been so close.
Chris wants to talk college football, so we'll get Chris on. Hey, Chris, how you doing, man?
Hey, good, good. Hey, I got one of my most disappointed teams this year, I think, which it's kind of hard for me to say because I'm a Bama fan. But I really do kind of appreciate the play calling of Gus Malzahn as a coach. But what would be disappointing to them for Auburn this year? And my second question before I hang up and listen is, we have a debate, me and a buddy of mine. Is it an argument that David Palmer may be the best offensive player to ever play at Alabama? And I hang up with this.
David Palmer, we'll get into the discussion. I would love to have seen David Palmer with Nick Saban recruiting talent around him, where you could not – I mean, David Palmer was the focus of every defensive coordinator every week because he was the playmaker.
And you couldn't stop him. It didn't matter where you lined up David Palmer. He was that good. And I know a lot of our listeners that, you know, are younger than 35 probably have no idea or they know who he was, but they never had an opportunity to see number two play. He was that good. And I can't even imagine him in today's college football where it's nothing but offense and everything is so spread out. And even if you put him at quarterback, say in a Lincoln Riley system.
That's right.
He's a better quarterback than Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. I mean, David Palmer at quarterback, that's probably the position he would play in college football
probably
today.
Probably so.
He'd probably be the quarterback. If not, if he was still a receiver.
You give him 2 years with Lincoln Riley, he wins a Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, at quarterback.
He was that good.
That's how good David Palmer is. Bo Bounds, sports talk radio guy in Jacksonville, Mississippi. He had this to say on Paul Feinbaum's show in the afternoon on Jocks about Matt Luke and the temperature of Ole Miss fans who he says are really not inspired about Matt Luke and the future of him leading Ole Miss to championship quality performances down the road.
I like Matt. He's a nice guy. He's fun to have a beer with. But they're not buying Matt Luke as the guy to – I mean, they've got to start back somewhere, Paul. So they've got to go to the – Independence Bowl or the Music City Bowl or the Belk Bowl, and I don't believe that 90% of their fan base doesn't think that he can lead them there. I mean, he went from offensive line coach to head coach because of everything that went on off the field, and I'm in Jackson. I mean, here we are with 550,000 people, and it's loaded with Mississippi State and Ole Miss people here, and I don't run across anybody that's excited that – or believes that Matt Luke is going to take them back to maybe a Gator Bowl or a Music City Bowl or even a Belk Bowl type level, much less higher than that.
Doesn't run into anybody. When you go broad brush, you open up the door for someone to come back and question you about what you just said. Rarely is it the athletic director of the school you're talking about. In this case, though, Ross Bjork wanted to defend his coach, and he did that. He has done that on social media. He's done that anywhere he can, including yesterday with our guys on three-man front. This is Ross Bjork yesterday here on Jocks, basically saying Bo Bounds doesn't have a good feel of what Ole Miss fans really believe about Matt Luke.
You know, what was said in that quote, you know, is inaccurate. It doesn't come from a credible source. And what he also said during that whole segment about our football coach and our fans and all, just has no credibility. And so when that happens, you know, I think my job is to be a voice in that and defend or fight back or whatever phrase you want to use. And so I think you got to use it strategically.
He's talking about using social media to defend his coach there.
Look, I like Ross Bjork. I like how outspoken he is, very candid guy. And I got to hear the interview with the three-man front guys yesterday. So I respect him standing up for his guy. But I don't know what Bo has to gain by just coming out and saying this. Look, I've talked to a couple of Ole Miss fans, and they think, Matt Luke, we love how passionate he is about the program, a former player.
He's an Ole Miss guy. That's a check in his column.
I mean, he would take a bullet for this program. There's no doubt. We've had him on the show multiple times. He seems like a great guy. I gave him an A year one. What he was able to do to keep this thing on the rails, to navigate a decent product. But I gave him a D last year. His best win was week one against Texas Tech. They didn't get any better. They won one conference game. That was against the worst team in the conference in Arkansas. That was a tight game. I just thought it was a really bad bad result to what could have been a decent year. I thought they would win 7 or 8 games last year.
Matt Luke is a guy who loves his program. I love people who love his program. Is he closer to Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney, Kirby Smart? Or is he closer to Mike Shula, who loved his program too?
Oh, he's more Mike Shula. Really respect the passion. I just don't think this is going to equate to a lot of success in Oxford. And right now, you can make an argument. Outside of Arkansas, this might be, well, it is, the most difficult job in the West. They're going to be underdogs in every SEC game this year. So, you know, it looks like maybe even a best-case scenario, they're 2-6 in conference.
Matt is in Birmingham. Matt, welcome to the show, man. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to comment on the Ross Bjork, Matt Luke thing for a while. I played ball at Ole Miss from 02 to 06, and Matt Luke was a D-line coach there. And y'all are absolutely – I mean, look, everybody knows he bleeds red and blue, but – and y'all may have touched on this earlier, but, you know, if you rewind the clocks back 2-3 years ago when Matt Luke got hired, you know, never before had we seen so many coaches – think about all the coaching vacancies in the SEC at the time. Texas A&M, Florida, Tennessee. There was like 5 of them open. So at the time, Ross Bjork needed somebody. You know, at best, Ole Miss was going to get their 5th best hire. And this was, you know, what coach was going to take an Ole Miss job over 5 other SEC jobs? Hey, look, you know what? I don't want these jobs. I want to go to the school where the NCAA is just hammering them. Nobody was going to do it. So it was a very strategic move with Ross Bjork. Hey, look, let's get a guy that's going to weather the storm for a while, crank out maybe a 6-win, 7-win season. He's our guy. You know, Matt Luke is one of those guys that, I kid you not, y'all do stake bets all the time. I wish I could jump in on it. If Matt Luke loses his job in a year from now, 2 years or 3 years from now, I almost guarantee you he would stay on the staff again, like always, and just be a D-line coach.
I could see this be Luke Fickell at Ohio State.
He would take a demotion and go back to just being the defensive line coach. Here's the guy I wanted to hear from. He's an Ole Miss grad, Brandon. We had a couple of those last segment. Brandon, as an Ole Miss grad, I know Bo Bounds' history, and I know where he comes from, right? It'd be like me talking Auburn football on here. But how close is Bo to being right about this? And how close are you to Ross Bjork being right about this?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the attitude of the Ole Miss, we'll call it family, we took umbrage to what Bo said, right?
Right.
I mean, he's a Mississippi State guy, and look, don't you know? Let's say he's probably right, but you know, secondly, it's our program, but
right.
Don't talk about it.
He's right, but you can't be right because you're a Mississippi State guy.
That's right. It's our dirty laundry.
Yes.
Let us air it, not Bo Bounds. I think it's kind of the attitude, of the fan base. And I think really, just kind of some resignation on the part of everybody as to this is our lot for a while. You know, if you look at it, and look, let me say this. I think it was the right decision to hire Matt Luke when we did. I know the previous caller talked about kind of the sanctions and things like that when we had our job search. Right, but I think a point that he missed is the sanctions and penalties hadn't been announced yet by the NCAA.
Right,
and so when we were doing the search, you had a lot of questions from potential candidates as to what's going to happen. And there was so much uncertainty that we just weren't going to land a top tier coach. Right, so and combine that with we had already imposed the bowl ban. So we've got a loss of revenue, and then we were looking at additional, right, no postseason play. So we lost a lot of revenue. So I think at the time it made sense. Matt's here. We can get him for cheap. The players love the guy. He can kind of, you know, keep the ship afloat, so to speak, until we weather the storm. So, you know, I think you guys made a comparison to Mike Shula. Yeah, he's our Mike Shula. That's exactly what he is.
And see, I'm the guy that always tries to bring up Mike Shula played a key role in Alabama football history in that dark period of time, doing something that no one else wanted to do. No one else.
That's right. I agree with you. You know, I think I heard a pretty good joke. So, you know, Matt went out and he hired Rich Rod and Mike McIntyre, which I think says a ton about Matt Luke's character. And the joke really is, hey, the battle for interim head coach between Rich Rod and McIntyre is going to be amazing.
Well, it is.
Brandon, thank you.
Most of these guys have egos, and to be non-threatening, to be able to get guys that have that kind of credibility in coaching ranks, I think that does show a lot about Matt Luke. I kind of disagree with you. I know where you're going on this, and I know you've got a relationship with Mike Shula or had one. But you say nobody else wanted this. It was Mike Shula's only opportunity to be a head coach. And this is Matt Luke's only opportunity to be a head coach. And Matt Luke's making a lot of money right now.
Do you not think that Mike Shula hurt his case on being an NFL head coach by what went on in Tuscaloosa as a head coach in college? That if Mike Shula had stayed in the NFL and did what he did briefly with Tampa, what he ended up doing with Cam for a brief period at Carolina, he would have gotten an opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL, whether that had worked out or not,
it
I don't
probably
know.
Probably burns out like Dave Shula. I mean, he would have gotten an opportunity.
He would have been a head coach in the NFL, and that's been harder for him now because of what went on in Tuscaloosa. Rockstar's viewing menu for tonight brought to you by our friends at You Break, I Fix. Rockstar, what are you watching?
7 p.m. on Flix tonight, a movie that I really enjoyed, and I don't like his catalog, but Johnny Depp's best movie, Leonardo DiCaprio should have gotten an Oscar for it. You got Crispin Glover.
I've never
John
seen
C.
it.
John C. Reilly.
I've never seen it. I've got to go back and watch this.
Juliette Lewis is in it. It's a weird movie. It's funny. It's sad. But Leonardo DiCaprio is in so good in this film, playing a kid with Down syndrome.
When he's only like 13, right?
He's probably, he's always looked so young. He's probably 17, 16, 17.
Now, is Kathy Bates in this too?
No. Their mom is a very, very, very large woman. Okay. I think this is the only movie she was ever in. But it is a, Crispin Glover is the funeral director of the town. It's a small town. John C. Reilly is like the repairman. What's her name? What's Ted Danson's wife? Mary Steenburgen is in it.
That's a good cast, and it's, I think Crispin Glover is always a really good actor, just completely strange.
That's true. And then tonight at 8 p.m. on TNT, I have never watched it. I probably won't watch it tonight. The NBA Rising Stars game.
Yeah.
That's one extra day of the All-Star Weekend in Charlotte. Is Slam Dunk tonight, or is that
tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night.
Yeah. I don't think tonight's really needed.
Yeah, it's just something to fill a date, fill an arena to make it worth a weekend there in Charlotte.
Is that where they do Kevin Hart plays too? Or what was the thing where Kevin Hart always plays, or Justin Timberlake?
Oh, that's the celebrity game. Oh. And I think the celebrity game, it was on Friday. I don't know if it's on Friday or Saturday. I get confused with that. Tonight would be a good night to go on and draft the teams. I know they've already done that.
Yeah.
But I think you could make that a bigger deal.
Do it live in front of people. Yeah. So it is a big game tomorrow for Alabama. Not a must win. They're good resume-wise, but it's a big game. And it's a huge game for Florida. A chance for them to sort of pad their situation when you talk about bracketology and them making it to the tournament. Because they are a team that's in and they're out. They're in and they're out. They are on that proverbial bubble and will be until the end.
Yeah, and I still think this is a big game for Alabama. I agree with you. I think they're in right now. But just imagine if you do lose a home game to Florida tomorrow, then you got to go on the road and take on an A&M team that upset you and Coleman on that last second shot just over a month ago. And if you were to lose that game, you've got three consecutive losses, and now you might be on the other side of the bubble. So I think tomorrow's a huge game for both sides, and I'm really surprised where this Florida team is right now.
New bracketology out last night. Lenardi, before he went to bed, Florida is the first team out, and their resume doesn't look great compared to Alabama. That's
I think
how,
what helps Florida is the SEC is viewed as one of the best conferences right now.
Oh, absolutely. And Wimp talked about a soft bubble. We always talk soft bubble, but Wimp pointed that out yesterday with us. That's how soft the bubble is. Florida is the first team out. Arkansas is in the next four out. And then other than that, the SEC has seven teams in. That includes Alabama, who hangs as a 10 seed right now. And if you're wondering about Auburn, in the latest Joe Lunardi bracketology, they have dropped down to a 9 seed. Just his last time out before their last loss at home to Ole Miss, they were a 7 seed. Lunardi's latest bracketology has them at a 9 seed. Alabama at a 10 seed. Florida, first team out. Part of Lunardi's bracketology at ESPN.com. Did you see where two high school students basically catfished rivals and they got them to rank a player that they invented in their head and made a social media account from? What a bizarre story.
Yeah, not surprising.
You're not surprised by that?
I'm not. I mean, we've got Manti Te'o actually dated the girl for months. Or was it even years that he never saw before? This happens all the time. And, I mean, I guess if you're well-versed in recruiting, maybe you would kind of understand this. But these sites are the ones that got caught up on it, too.
Well, that's to me, that's what – making it up isn't what is surprising. To me, that that rivals got caught up and gave this guy a rating that he didn't exist, if this story is correct, is what is shocking to me.
Vassar, Tennessee is where Blake Carringer was, I guess, made up where he was from. 6'6", 315-pound tackle. They said he had offers from Alabama, Georgia, Florida. Pretty good offers there. It showed up on Rivals.com and the Knoxville News Sentinel. Because it was on Rivals.com, he was automatically listed in the 24/7 sports composite rankings, which aggregates and averages recruiting rankings from its own site as well as Rivals.com and ESPN.com. Now, they've since gone on record, and they said this will never happen again.
Yeah, 24/7, they just take ratings from Rivals and others, and it goes into their 24/7 composite. So it registered because Rivals ranked him. So 24/7 basically saying Rivals was the root of the problem for them, and they will never let that happen again. How Rivals gave him – the old joke was with some rankings in these college services is he's a 2-star until Alabama started recruiting him and he gets an extra star. He's a 4-star. If Alabama recruits him, he's a 5-star.
Well, I'm not familiar with the Knoxville News Sentinel's Prep Extra Twitter account, but they tweeted out just a week ago, less than a week ago, here are your top 10 football prospects from the class of 2020 in the Knoxville area, and Carringer is one of the guys listed on there.
Oh, now we get fooled every now and then on the show about stuff. Getting a rating for a player that doesn't exist is
that's tough.
Is a pretty big get for those two kids that were trying to get Rivals a little bit there. Four downs here, brought to you by our great friends at Vulcan Tires.
First down.
Which New York team has a better chance of winning a championship in the next 10 years? Your New York Knicks or the New York Jets?
Well, if the Knicks get everything they want this off season, Durant, Kyrie, Zion, and Keaton Knox, and still have some money left to build a team around them, they've got a chance.
That's not asking a lot, is it?
if they don't get all that, then it's going to be the New York Jets.
You know, the answer obviously is neither one of these teams. It's hard to believe it's been 1969 for the Jets. It's been 1973 for your New York Knicks.
The answer is the Yankees.
I feel better about Adam Gase / Sam Bradford, or excuse me, Sam Darnold, than I do about what the Knicks possibly will get. I'll lean Jets. I don't think it's either one of them.
Yeah, I'll lean Jets. Yankees the answer, though, yes.
Second down.
Speaking of Zion, moving forward, you can represent one of the two, Zion or Trevor Lawrence.
We touched on this a little bit one day. I think I would go Zion because of shoe contract, length of career, and the possibility of being more marketable in other commercials. I think he has the personality and the name Zion that will allow him to possibly do commercials. You know, you really haven't seen a ton of LeBron James commercials in the world, relatively speaking to what he was compared to Michael Jordan or Charles Barkley. You really don't see a LeBron a lot in commercials.
I do. You really don't?
Not a ton compared to what it should be for the most popular athlete or most recognizable athlete on the planet. You don't see a ton of LeBron commercials.
I mean, I've seen a ton of Nike. I've seen a ton of Sprite. I'm trying to think of some other ones.
Okay,
I mean,
that's about it.
oh, he's on TV doing his shows now. It's all like his, unless he got a piece of it.
But I would go Zion.
I would go Zion, too, just by this. If Trevor Lawrence, and I think both of these guys are can't miss, but I do think the shoe deal takes it to another level. But even if Zion comes out with that athleticism and he's only a 10-8 guy, he's still going to make $12 million a year.
Right, for a long time.
Yeah, if Trevor Lawrence comes out and he ends up being a bust, he's got, you know, 3 or 4 years and that's it.
Bad team, and his stock could drop really quick.
Third down.
NASCAR makes the four downs. Who do you got this weekend in the Daytona? A first-time winner or a repeat winner? This would be a good stake bet, by the way.
It would be. I'm going to go somebody that's won the Daytona 500 before. I'll go somebody that's won the Daytona 500 before. I think your winner is going to be one of the guys that won last night, Harvick and Logano, and I think they have both won the Daytona 500 before.
I think Harvick has. I know Kurt Busch has. I know Austin Dillon, Denny Hamlin, Kenseth, Logano. Keselowski, who's your favorite at 7-1, has never won it.
Yeah, I don't like where Keselowski's car is right now. Denny Hamlin is a sexy pick. I'll take someone who's won the Daytona 500 before against somebody who has not. A lot of first-time winners, though, happen in the Daytona 500.
Fourth down.
Better value right now. The Mets paying Bobby Bonilla $1.2 million, a guy that hasn't played in 19 years, but will continue to get that through 2028. Or giving Colin Kaepernick $20 million to play in the AAF.
I'm surprised Cap didn't play in the AAF. Well, no, I'm not. Because if he played and couldn't perform anymore, then the debate is over on whether or not he should be in the NFL. He hasn't played, I think I saw, since 2016. And he's 31 years old. So 31 years old and hasn't played since 2016. He turns down the opportunity to play in the Alliance. I don't necessarily blame him for not playing in the Alliance. He's been an NFL quarterback, so he's supposed to be better. But if he really wanted to play in the NFL right now, if he went and lit up the Alliance, right, somebody would give him a chance.
There's no doubt that he wouldn't be, and I know there's people that would disagree with this, but if he lit up this league, he would get signed as a backup quarterback and then have his opportunity.
Or if he didn't, then that's case closed. It is no collusion doubt at that point. So if I was him, I probably would have played if I really want to play again. But he's probably...
He would have done it for $20 million.
Yeah, $20 million, he said.
Yeah.
I don't blame the Alliance for not doing that. No. It would have been great value to have had a $20 million contract to play 10 games in the Alliance.
I don't know if you get all of the salaries from the 8 teams if it equates to $20 million, does it?
They asked Tim Tebow to play, too, and Tim said, no, I'm going to concentrate on baseball with the Mets.
Yeah, more of a legitimate reason.
Yeah, that is Four Downs brought to you by Vulcan Tires. Dabo Swinney on Coach K's radio show on Sirius XM. Talking a little ball, and then Dabo, of course, like Dabo does, gets into an interesting conversation about Zion Williamson.
The only guy that I think could be better than him as a freshman is the Zion kid you got. I put him at tight end or wide out or D end or wherever he wanted to play. I might even put him at quarterback.
Well, you'd run the Wildcat. You'd run the Wildcat, though.
Put in the Wildcat, no doubt, no doubt.
That's Dabo on with Coach K there, and Coach K learning very quickly. It's hard to get in a word with Dabo there, but Zion's talent on a football field. We do this with LeBron, too, back in the day, how good LeBron would have been. Allen Iverson, right, was a great high school football player at one point.
Yeah, we had one of the recruiting experts on, 15 years ago, and we were asking him the best recruit he's ever seen, and he said it was Allen Iverson out of Virginia Beach. He said he was that good, could do absolutely everything on the football field, but you look at Zion – and his explosion and how agile he is at 6'7", basically 300 pounds. Imagine him at defensive end.
Would you put him at defensive end or would you have him as a tight end?
I think I'd put him at defensive end. LeBron seems more of the tight end fix, but Zion, just the havoc that he could wreak.
With those hands and the way he can jump out of the gym, though?
I mean, how many tip balls for interceptions would he create?
Okay, we'll throw that poll question out. Where do you put Zion? Defensive end, linebacker, tight end, quarterback?
Yeah, I just think with that first step, I don't know how you'd block him.
How do you block that guy? But it is a big basketball weekend. Tennessee-Kentucky is the biggest game. You think that maybe this is Kentucky's time to catch Tennessee here. What is the one thing you like about this Kentucky team against Tennessee that gives them a chance? Is it maybe a sense of desperation after a loss to LSU?
I do think the timing is perfect. And you look at Tennessee, they've won a school record 19 consecutive games. Ashton Hagans... I think you've got probably an advantage at the point position. I just think Kentucky's a more athletic team. You know, it's hard to it's hard to put a value on a guy like Grant Williams and even Schofield and what they do for Rick Barnes' team. But I just think overall, I just think when you look at entire rosters, I just look at the athleticism of Kentucky, the level they're playing defensively right now, and I think Hagans is making them go right.
Auburn's at Vandy, 11 o'clock, early start. You'll hear that game here on Jocks 94.5. Anthony McLemore on what he expects from Auburn's guards who are coming off a bad game against Ole Miss. Here's Anthony.
I feel like every good player has a fumble. I feel like Bryson and Jerry will figure out how to get out of it, and they're both good players. Bryson's a senior, Jerry's a junior, but they're both like seniors. You know what I'm saying? They'll figure it out. They're both smart and got good IQs.
They'll figure it out. Dangerous game for Auburn up at Vandy. I know Vandy hasn't won an SEC game yet, but they have shown signs, especially at home. They took that great Tennessee team to overtime up there. This is a dangerous game. Vandy will win an SEC game somewhere. Nobody goes 0-18, right?
Yeah, well, they're 0-11 right now. I wouldn't assume. I mean, I think that's one of the more difficult things to do in sport is to go 0-18. But you start looking at these games. South Carolina was a one-possession game. You mentioned the Tennessee game goes to overtime. Alabama, they close down within the final couple of minutes, ultimately lose that game by double digits. They're going to win one of these games, but this is a game that Bruce Pearl, I think he rallies the troops. And I think Auburn pulls away in this one. I just don't see Auburn losing this game. This would be an awful loss. And I think it probably at least this particular point, I don't know if you agree with this, I think Auburn might be on the other side of the bubble with a loss here.
A loss at Vandy would definitely put them in, would start seeing their names pop up.
Yeah, at least in harm's way.
In last four in or last team with a bye. They're a 9 seed in the latest bracketology, down 2 lines from the earlier in the week bracketology.
You know,
the loss at home to Ole Miss hurt them a lot. Talking a little college football, you know, we talked coaching today. We've discussed what went down on three-man front yesterday with Ross Bjork, the athletic director of Ole Miss, responding to Bo Bounds' comments from Feinbaum about the temperature of support from Ole Miss's fans on Matt Luke. Matt Luke, technically a first-year coach last year after the interim tag was pulled off. Let's go with the 2018 class first, the guys who were first-year stops last year. I'll throw some names out, and you tell me good, average, or bad. Chad Morris, obviously bad, right?
That would be bad, yeah. I mean, you didn't win a game in the SEC, so that's got to be bad.
Staying in the SEC, Dan Mullen.
That was really good, I thought. Watching Florida, they didn't look like, and they finished 6th in the coaches, 7th in the AP. They didn't seem like a top 10 team. You've got to have 10 teams in the top 10. But to go 10-3, I'll give them a lot of credit. And I thought it was a really good year, first year for Dan Mullen.
Well, let me add a caveat here. I want you to tell me, do eventually they get the job done and have success at their job? Chad Morris, bad year. Does he get it turned around and have success at Arkansas, or will it end in a fiery mess?
I think it'll end in a fiery mess. And I like Chad Morris, but I thought Brett Bielema was a better hire, and obviously I was wrong on that. And it seemed like after a couple of 8-5s, he was at least going to keep it together. Then the bottom falls out of that, and he obviously gets blown out. And you bring Chad Morris in. I think Brett Bielema is a better coach, and I just think it's a really difficult job, and I don't see Chad Morris getting it done.
Dan Mullen, you obviously think there'll be great success for him.
I think he'll ultimately win a national championship.
The guy we were talking about earlier, and who three-man front talked to their AD about, Matt Luke, where would you put his season last year?
I said it earlier, a D. You know, I go A first season based on expectations and, you know, difficulty. But I thought last year there was a lot of opportunity, and your best win was week one of the season, and everything went south after that, and you only had one SEC win. So to me, it was a D. It was a bad year.
And where would you put his next 5 years, say? Is he there 5 years from
now?
He
will not make it 5 years.
Yeah. Jeremy Pruitt, what did you think of his first year?
I thought Jeremy Pruitt's was pretty good. I mean, I would give him a B-minus, C-plus. But I thought it was improving.
Trending right? You think his future is bright?
The biggest problem for Jeremy Pruitt is residing in the SEC East along with Georgia and Florida. But I thought overall, you know, they were 2-6 in conference, but the year before they were defeated. So a 2-win improvement, 5-7, almost got them bowl eligible. You know, it wasn't a terrible product this year. So I would go C-plus, B-minus for year 1 under Jeremy Pruitt. I don't know where I am long-term with Jeremy Pruitt, though.
Quick here, because we've discussed him a little bit. Some of our listeners think Jimbo should be in the discussion for third best coach in the country. Jimbo Fisher, what did you think of his first year at A&M?
C+, B minus. I mean, 8-4, 9-3 is kind of what we expected.
Willie Taggart was a disaster.
Disaster.
Really, really bad. Chip Kelly, sort of disaster, right, at UCLA?
I would say that that's an F, too. I don't know how you could have either one of those guys. And just looking at Chip Kelly, I mean, this is a team that was 3-9 overall.
And for what you said about Chad Morris, you don't think Jim Mora Jr. is a better coach than Chip Kelly, right? Or maybe time as the game passed Chip Kelly by.
I don't want to say that yet, but I think year two is pivotal.
Kevin,
and I don't know what the expectation is this year for UCLA.
Kevin Sumlin at Arizona.
You know, I thought it was kind of an average year. Khalil Tate was a totally different quarterback, but was still really effective.
I was expecting more average year. I was expecting less from Herm Edwards at Arizona State. Got more than I expected.
Oh, yeah. I thought you would flip those around. I thought Arizona State or would be more of the 3-9 kind of Chip Kelly, and I thought Arizona would be more of the 7-6 Arizona State.
And then there's Scott Frost at Nebraska.
Again, they got better and better each and every week, and I think outside of Dan Mullen, I think I would take Scott Frost in front of any of these coaches.
So that gets me to this year's crop, and those were some big names that changed jobs at some big-time jobs. Ryan Day inherits the Lincoln Riley trophy of getting a great program, and you would expect Lincoln Riley-type things out of Ryan Day, right? That's what you would expect.
Well, if it's anything less, I mean, I go back to Jim Tressel, and he's a guy that won a national championship at this program, and then obviously Urban Meyer did, and the expectation with Ryan Day, this guy was really handpicked, and it was Urban Meyer's guy, and if Ryan Day doesn't win national championships in the next 2 or 3 years, and that's a high bar, obviously, then I think it's going to be a major disappointment.
I mean, you look at last year, Florida State, Texas A&M, Florida, Tennessee, Nebraska, UCLA, those were the type jobs that we filled for the 2018 season. After Ohio State, you got some work to do at some of these jobs. West Virginia, Neil Brown, I like the hire, but that's a tough place to meet expectations these days.
Yeah, I like Neil Brown. You've had some special players at West Virginia over the last few years. Will Greer, one of those guys. Geno Smith, one of those guys. And you still couldn't get to a Big 12 conference championship game. You went through a list of teams that have never played for their conference championships. West Virginia is one of those teams. Dana Holgorsen, I think, is a pretty good coach, and he seemed to really top out at 8 or 9 wins. I don't know how much more we should expect out of Neil Brown.
Matt Wells at Texas Tech, Mel Tucker at Colorado, Manny Diaz at Miami. I'm not sure how many of our listeners can name the coach at Louisville or Kansas State, but Scott Satterfield at Louisville, Chris Kleiman at Kansas State, Mac Brown's back at North Carolina, Les Miles at Kansas, Mike Locksley at Maryland. If I asked you of those groups, of all of those, take Ryan Day off the table, who are you buying the most?
I don't know if I'm buying any of those guys.
Well, it's a tough job, but I love what Mike Locksley is doing at Maryland.
I don't see it working out. I mean, look, and I know Locksley, the hands were tied at his former job, at least a head coach. And what was he, 3-30 overall, something crazy like that? I just don't see a ton of success at Maryland.
Diaz will rally the troops at Miami, but you ask the question if Miami can ever do it again. I think you asked the same thing at Colorado with Mel Tucker. I like Mel Tucker. He'll get things going in the right direction. I don't know what you can do at Colorado anymore.
Scott Satterfield's a guy that built it from scratch at Appy State, and you've got a Louisville program that's had success 2 different times under Bobby Petrino. And you can go nowhere but up. I mean, this is a team that was 0-8 in the ACC last year. They were 2-10 overall.
So pick one for me. You got to pick one of them, and Ryan Day's off the table. He's automatic. He's the Lincoln Riley silver spoon guy.
I'm not going to go Wells at Texas Tech or Kleiman at Kansas State. I just think those jobs are too difficult. I'll go Satterfield at Louisville.
I think that's a good answer, Scott Satterfield at Louisville.
But, again, you've got to deal with Dabo and Clemson, and, you know, is Louisville ever going to be good enough under what's going on right now with Dabo in the next 10 years, even once in 10 years, to win the Atlantic?
I want to go Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, but it's such a tough job academically, but the recruiting
the good circle, news is,
the 150-mile circle there.
The good news is that Coastal is wide open.
Yeah, I'm going to go Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech with a slight nod to Mel Tucker at Colorado. I still believe in that Colorado job of doing something special.
I don't know why we're stubborn on that Colorado job. I just don't think it's a good job. And what Mike McIntyre did a couple of years ago, getting them to a Pac-12 championship game, was pretty incredible. And it's hard to believe that is a team that won a national championship. You know, it's been 30 years now. But the Colorado program is a lot different than what it once was.
The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.